This is episode 5 of the Sales Change Podcast, and this is the one featuring James Burt. What podcast features Vauxhall Novas, X Factor Auditions, German Music Festivals, Zenith Windows, and starting your own podcast agency? You probably guessed it by now. That's episode 5 of the Sales Change Podcast, and it's featuring James Burt, the CEO, founder, whatever you want to call him, of the Ultimate Podcast Group. We got all of that, plus the answers to the Sales Change 5 questions from James. This is a fantastic episode. Remember, visit your favorite podcast site, give us a 5-star review, leave me a comment, and sign up for the newsletter by visiting www.saleschange.co.uk/newsletter. Sign up for it. You'll get it in your inbox every Monday morning at 9:45. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, James. Welcome to the Sales Change Audio Experience. How are you? This is a new name.
I like it. I think it's. I really like it because I looked at your. I was listening earlier. Not that I was snooping just to make sure of all the questions you could ask. Because you actually do a very thorough pre-interview preparation, which I think is very nice. I was looking at. I was like, the artwork looks very different on this bit. It looks really nice.
Yeah, the artwork's very, very new, and it's new for season 2. So you're going to be like the 5th episode. So we're recording this before all of the episodes gone out. But you're going to be like the 5th episode that's gone out. So
they always say, you know what they say, fifth is best. You know that famous saying that no one's ever said.
How are you, my friend?
I am very, very well. Lockdown has provided me an opportunity to take a step back, take a breather, take a view, an overview on where I was going in life and completely change direction. So yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you, mate. I'm doing very, very well.
For the listeners, where were you going, James? What's your backstory?
My background was in broadcast PR and marketing since about 2006. And then sort of did various stuff in the PR marketing space from that sort of point onwards. And I worked with the likes of Nando's and BMW and Thomas Cook, not such a good brag these days, and all these sort of like multinational Xbox, you know, these huge companies. And I sort of did that. And then I did sales and promotions. And I was in charge of sales for a network that did the advertising on 160 radio stations around the UK. So I've been in and around the broadcast space since about 2006. 2017, a mate of mine said, you keep talking about doing a podcast. Why have you not launched it yet? And I was like, oh, well, I'm busy and I've got this company that I'm running and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just about to have a baby. And he was like, that's all valid, but it's all nonsense largely. He's like, I'll tell you what, I'll set you a challenge. If you've got to launch your podcast in the next 30 days, and if you do, I'll be your first guest. And he was a former international boxing champion, bodybuilding champion. He'd done trials for WWE, but he didn't really do interview stuff anymore. He's like, if you launch a podcast for 30 days, I'll be your first guest. If you don't launch it within 30 days, I'll go on social media and I'll tell everybody that anything that you say about mindset and success and motivation is null and void because you don't live up to the message that you preach. And I was like, okay, fair enough. So I just had a baby, so I did not need more stuff to do. And at that point, I also ran a property management company. So I had 93 tenants across 21 houses. So we were in charge of about 50 million quid worth of property in South London. And I was getting anything between 30 and 150 text messages from tenants a day. I did not need another thing to do. Jeez. But thank God my mate twisted my arm and said, you got to do it. Because I launched it in 2017. And the day that I launched I listened to a podcast called How to Launch a Podcast by John Lee Dumas. And he's a guy who does Entrepreneur on Fire, very, very big, famous podcaster. Yeah, yeah. And I sort of layered in the stuff that he had taught via this podcast and the stuff that I knew from PR and marketing and launched my own show. I thought, oh, let's see what happens. And the day that I launched, Tim Ferriss was number 1, I was number 2, and Gary Vee was number 3. Wow. Now, don't get me wrong, Tim Ferriss and Gary Vee stayed in the top 10 longer than I did, but it proved the concept that this systemized little process thing that I tested out had worked. And literally off the back of that, from that day in 2017, I then got asked to do, you know, other people were coming to me saying, how did you do it? How did you do it? So weirdly, in the last sort of preceding 3 years, I've become one of the UK's leading experts in podcasting. I've helped to launch 120 plus shows. 85% of the people that I work with end up in the iTunes top charts. And I've now launched a company called the Ultimate Podcast Group. So we handle every aspect of podcasting, from training and consultancy to big brands, right through to the actual production of it for solopreneurs and smaller companies. So I was going down one weird and wonderful path. I'm also an IPQA qualified performance coach. I was doing sort of coaching and mentoring and that kind of stuff. And where me and you met, Matt, was in January. I got asked to come on board and partner up with a guy called James Sinclair, very successful guy. he said to me, you know, come and work with me. Let's do some stuff together. And that's where I was at. I was the MD of the live events training business that he had when COVID hit. And then we sort of got, I remember the day, there was that Monday where they were going to do all the official announcements. And we sat around in the office and like, oh my God, they're actually going to shut the country down. This is ridiculous. And I've just gone on, started working with Jim, who's a really good friend of mine as well. So we wanted to make it work. But it was fundamentally, it was a live events business in the business space. We're like, well, this business is not going to work for a little while. So we pivoted, everyone's favorite word. So we pivoted everything online and created this thing called the Entrepreneurs University. And it was great. You know, we got a couple of hundred members in really, really quickly because of James's background and his, you know, he's already got a big mailing list. And he's already got
enthusiastic as well, isn't he?
Oh, he is. And he's the, you know, I've been around some great people. And he's one of the greatest people that I've ever been around. You know, you're the average of the five people that you sort of hang out with.
Yeah.
I realized that my level had increased when he was one of the five people I spent the most time with. He's the message that he preaches. Yeah. You know, 100 million quid in sales, 34 years old, 450 staff. He's wise beyond his years and he's smart beyond, you know, people's comprehension of what he actually does. Because he's a funny guy and
he's got a lot of business intellect, hasn't he?
He's the smartest businessman I've ever met. The smartest businessman I've ever met. And we went on furlough. So there was that Monday where everything was going to get shut down. Tuesday we went back into the office. We said, shit, we're going to have to change everything really, really quick. So everything we're going to teach in these live seminars, I was like, let's record them into videos. We'll turn it into an online platform. So we literally, that one day, we spent 17 hours in the office recording these videos. Whoa. So that we could then go home and we'd get locked down for what we thought at the time, hilariously, was going to be, oh my God, this could be terrible. We could be locked up for 6 weeks. 6 months later, doesn't seem like such a bad thing. So yeah, so that's the journey that I was going down.
I'm never ever going to grumble about kids' school holidays ever again. When they're up for 6 weeks. Honestly, the kids have got, 2.5 weeks till they go back to school and we're recording this. And I cannot wait. I wake up every morning thinking, it's like a prison cell. I'm knocking the lines off my wall
till they go back to school. Do you know what the teaching unions should do? The week before they're going back, they should go out on the strike and say, double our pay or we're not coming back. I guarantee no one will quibble it.
Yeah, the public will massively support them.
Yeah, 100%. People would literally pay out of their own pocket for publicly funded education just to get the kids out the flipping house. But yeah, so the opportunity with that COVID sort of gave us meant we sort of went home and we turned these sort of like videos that we created into this online platform, and we came up with this whole sort of Entrepreneurs University thing. And I love James, I love the team and everyone who's involved in that business. But I remember it was a Friday, and I just finished. We put it online in this one platform called Thinkific, which is a great online platform, but it's got a few real design flaws that we just couldn't get past. Like, you couldn't access people easily, you couldn't email people easily. And from a sales perspective, which I know is what this podcast is fundamentally about, you just couldn't engage in the way that is going to get sales. It's very much like a numbers. If you chuck thousands of people into this system on Thinkific, some of it will stick. You know, throw enough stuff against the wall, some of it will stick. But there was just some of the sales elements of it didn't work. So having never launched an online course, within a week we'd launch one. Within 3 weeks we were relaunching it on a different platform. I remember I came down on a Friday night and I said to my wife, I was like, oh, thank God we've got it on this new platform and it's going to work a lot better. And we've done the automated email sequences and blah, 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 and all this stuff. I was like, oh, I feel like I've climbed to the top of a mountain. And I will never forget it. She turned around and she went, but mate, you've not even got to base camp. And I was like, oh, just wounded me. And do you know what? Is that comment that I was like, I thought, I was at a point, and then I was like, but I'm not. And the bigger realization that I had was, well, if I'm at base camp and I'm trying to climb this mountain, I actually don't want to go on the rest of the journey, which is very strange because, as I mentioned, I love James, I love the business, I love the people that he's around. He's created an incredible team of people. You know, I'd like to hot desk in his office just to be around that energy and those people. But I was like, do you know what? I'm doing the right things for the wrong reason, if that makes sense. I'm doing it because of how much I like him and how much I respect him. I realized that ultimately, you know, because I spent the previous 3 years creating a very successful six-figure branding agency and a seven-figure coaching business. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I was building other people's brand while I was doing it, and I was about to go down the same path again. I don't mind ever making a mistake, but I do mind making it twice if I haven't learned the lesson. And I was like, do you know what? You're about to do the same thing here. You're about to build somebody else's brand, not your own. Take a bit of a breather and just let's see if we're actually heading in the right direction. And I realized that I wasn't fundamentally.
I'll tell you what, you're echoing sort of the Sales Change journey, because Sales Change started in October last year, and Sales Change was formed. I'll tell you what it was. I did some like freelancing consultancy, like sales consultancy for somebody, and got them an introduction into a company. And then they said, can you send me an invoice? And I was like, I haven't even got like a company. So I quickly went on Companies House and searched for some names and like sales coaching. Oh, that's taken. Sales this, sales that. No. And then I thought, well, what do I fundamentally do? And I go into businesses, old businesses, and I turn them into new businesses. So what I do is I create like a startup mentality. And this, I hate that phrase, but that startup, that drive and that passion to go in and, right, we're going to go and do this. This is our vision. This is what we're going to achieve. And then bring the team together and form something. So that's what I do. So that's where this name Sales and Change. Subsequent to that, I've come up with like this fantastic branding like idea. So you can't spell change without challenge. And that's what, so that's all of these names and all of these branding ideas and all of these slogans have come out of that. But Sales Change was essentially started because I needed to create an invoice for somebody who wanted to invoice me and say, you need to pay for this. And then I got in touch with the guys at Podcast Labs, who I know we've spoken about off air. They then said, oh, why don't you come and do a podcast? And I thought, do you know what? Because I used to present radio, similar to you. I used to present radio for BFBS. And then I also did a stint with...
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I presented radio for BFBS.
So do you know Frank, head of music over there?
Frank McCarthy, yeah.
Yeah, Frank, good old... Well, I did not know any of this.
The little story, Frank and I went to a festival in Germany. Together, we went to the Hurricane Festival and we got VIP tickets to go and sit in the Jack Daniels tent. And I will never forget it. It's the worst. We should talk about this off air, but it was the worst drug experience that I've ever had in my life. There was these Dutch people walking around in the Jack Daniels tent, and they had this massive open fire pit, like cooking sausages. And we were watching Kings of Leon at the Hurricane Festival. And then there was this marijuana going around. So I thought, you know what? I'm in Germany. Let's do what the Dutch do. Let's do what the Germans do. Let's have a little bit. For the next 6 hours, I was laid in the middle of a field just looking at the sky, wondering, what is my life about? And I missed the end of the Kings of Leon set. And I, honestly, that was one of the most craziest experiences of my life. And I was like, this must be 10, 12 years ago now. But yeah, Frank and I were...
Oh, my God.
Frank and I were in the Falkland Islands together. And Frank was my station
manager. Oh, wow.
Frank was my station manager while I was in the Falkland Islands. And then I met
Frank again.
How
did I not know any of this?
And then I met Frank again in Iraq. I think he's in Canada at the moment. I think he's station manager out in Canada. Oh, no, he might be in the Falklands again. I think he might be in the Falklands again. But yeah,
I haven't spoken to him for a little while because I used to do radio plugins. So I used to work with independent record labels and try and get their records played on the radio.
Yeah.
And Frank was one of my go-to people because if you know Frank, and people, if anyone listening to this knows Frank, he's a very nice guy, but he will tell you exactly what he thinks very, very quickly in no uncertain terms with very little filter for your feelings. Oh. So when I get a record, I'd literally send it to Frank first and put my little blurb together, my little press release. I'd send it to him and I was like, am I going to get rated or rinsed? And based on Frank's savageness of feedback, I would then change the press release before I sent it out to Radio 2.
Honestly, I remember one of my first couple of experiences in the Falklands, and we used to create trails for my show and do all that type of stuff. And I'd then start creating the stuff. And I remember Frank's cutting comments because I'd go in and I'd have this amazing idea and I'd put it all in audio and then do it all. And he'd just go, that's crap. Get rid of it.
He is savage, isn't he? He is savage.
But he's such a nice guy. We used to, so the Falkland Islands, serving, this is completely off topic, but serving in the Falkland Islands, there's more bars than there are people. So we used to do the DJ circuit together. So I used to be the warm-up DJ for Frank. And I remember my last night in the Falklands, and Frank used to give me a list of all the songs that I wasn't allowed to play because he was going to play them in his set. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Last night, I'm going to go and play all these songs. So he was at the bar, I remember it vividly. He was at the bar and I was in the DJ booth and I was doing all these tracks and I thought, and Basement Jacks were big at this time, so Red Alert and all that type of stuff. So I immediately started mixing Basement Jacks into all these other tracks, and I started doing all of this. And he looked at me and he went like that, but he just knew. He just knew. It was a fantastic night, that was. But anyway, yeah, so I used to do radio, and I did a little bit of a stint at Power FM before it became Capital, and that was down on the South Coast. And then, yeah, it just went away. And then my dream was to get back into radio presenting and do a bit of audio, do a bit of this, do a bit of that, and just become like front and center of the brand. So this is where it all came from. So when they offered me the opportunity to get into podcasting, I was like, yeah, I want to do this. And it's got that, you feel it as well. But when you're behind the mic, you feel like you're in control and you just want to have a conversation. You want to show your personality. So then Sales Change became a podcast. And then I thought, you know what, I don't want to work, and this is where I'm relating to your conversation, is I don't want to work for myself. I don't want to work for somebody else and build their business over and over again. And this is what I do. I go into old businesses and create new ones. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to use this as a vehicle to create what I want to do in the future. My business plan has a 3 or 4 year plan to grow slowly, monetize the podcast, monetize all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and then I'll branch out. So you've gone in like 2 feet straight in going, right, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. This is it. But I'm trying to take it a little bit slower.
That's kind of my mentality towards a lot of stuff. I did a podcast interview a little while ago, and they're like, "God, you've done a lot of stuff, haven't you?" Because I've been, you know, I was a cabaret singer back in the day, so I used to like sing what? Michael Bublé. Yeah, I used to be a Michael Bublé tribute act in Cyprus in Iron Apa. You can imagine how well Michael Bublé tributes go down in Iron Apa when everyone's just there to get lashed. So I did that, and then I was on X Factor. You can the year that Leon, I think there's a young Scottish guy, Leon, that won it. We were in on X Factor that year, got to the judges' houses. You can still find me on ITV2 singing Uptown Girl in a Tree to Fern Cotton. Don't ask how any of those things came about. But yeah, so I'd done that. Then I got into the broadcast PR thing. Then I got into property. But all of these things that have just sort of variously just happened along the route. And if I see an opportunity, I will just jump in with both feet. It was almost a running joke with my mates. At one point, I think before I was in my 30s, I think I'd had 36 jobs. I'd had more jobs than I had years on the planet. And it was this sort of running joke, like, oh, Bertie will just do anything. Oh, he's done. I used to do a really dodgy driving job, which I won't go into. I used to sell double glazing. I was a holiday rep. I was voted by the Saturday Telegraph as the world's worst holiday rep. I was a cabaret singer. I'd done all these weird and wonderful things. And at one point, it was almost like a bit of a shame that I was just chopping and changing. You know, I hadn't found my way in the world. I hadn't found what I wanted to do. But when I look back at it now, a bit sort of older and wiser, actually, I just see myself as an absolute opportunist. You know, the podcast is the space that we're in now. The marketplace is blowing up. Now is the time to jump in. Well, 2 years ago was the time to jump into it. A year ago would have been another time to jump into it. But today is another good opportunity. But I know that the marketplace of podcasting is only going in one direction, that is through the roof. So now I've got to, you know, put my flag in the sand, draw the line in the sand. Why am I talking about sand so much? Because you mentioned Power FM, it's really thrown me. You're this megastar DJ, and I've got a little bit. I feel like my microphone technique needs to improve massively, Matt. Now you've upset me and
mate,
concerned me greatly.
I got fired from the job for being drunk,
mate. So did I. I was chatting to a guy. I've started doing a podcast with a guy who, in theory, is a competitor because he does the same thing. He does podcast production and consultancy stuff. I mentioned this to you off air. We've been watching each other's content on LinkedIn and sort of have a mutual respect, but a massive disagreement with each other the whole time. So we said to each other, rather than sort of like this whole thing of like pretending competitors don't exist, like, why don't we just like collaborate and do a podcast together where we'll try and like all boats rise in a high tide. We'll try and help people out with some podcast advice and some expertise and stuff like that. But fundamentally, we're just going to disagree half of the time. But I did a podcast with him yesterday. He's got, you know, all the fancy setup and all this kind of stuff. So this is the second time in 2 days that I've been audio overwhelmed.
I wouldn't call myself an audiophile or a professional DJ. Those are two words that I would not associate with myself.
Have you DJed in a bar in the Falklands, and have you been on Power FM? Therefore, you're pro. Don't try and downplay it. But sorry, the point there was, so we were talking about people that we knew in the industry yesterday before we started recording with this guy, because, you know, like getting to know each other a little bit. Turns out that everyone that he hates in the radio industry, I also know and dislike as well. So I was on a radio station called Amazing Radio, and they brought in the ex-head of Radio 1 to turn this station around. They're like, we're going to create some sweeping changes. And I said to my mate, this is it. This is us now. This guy, ex-head of Radio 1. You know, he's very famous for, like, he was the guy who killed off Mark and Lard on Radio 1 Breakfast. Oh,
no. Yeah, yeah.
He was called, his nickname is The Hatchet, which is a name he gave himself because he's that much of a prick. But he came in, he's like, we're going to make these sweeping changes to the station. I was like, here we go, back to me and my mate. And he had done a very similar thing that happened to Neil, who I'd done this podcast with. So, yeah, interesting that I'm starting to be around. I guess it's a natural progression, really, that the podcast is space that I'm now in to dominate. I'm starting to rub shoulders with so many people that I used to know back in the day in the radio industry. And what's really interesting these days is the people that used to be the power players in the radio industry, now the power's flipped. So those people who tried to do me over back in the day, they better watch out. So I'm going to fucking take them down.
What lessons have you learned since you started this ultimate podcast group, James?
Lessons. I would say one of the big lessons is sort of month one, and I've actually got it. Let me get this little card. I'm going to show you this card. So my wife has started to do these beautiful little cards. So anytime there's like a little win in the business, back in the day, so when I was running a coaching business, which was making a lot of money, you know, we were sort of pulling in 25 grand a month easily, personally. So we had a good month. You bought a car. You had a good month. You bought a watch. And like really like muggy stuff. Looking back, it was like, why did I not invest it and put it into something that would be a nest egg that would be useful in COVID lockdown? But no, I didn't. I bought watches instead. But now, so I've got this here. So my wife does these little touch note photo cards. So if we've ever had like a little win in the business, then she does these little photo cards that I don't know about, and it just pops through the door. So, they talk about like sort of recognizing every win and every success and all that sort of stuff. So as you can see there, month one of the business, we did 7,725 quid in sales. You know, majority of that money was consultancy fees and podcast production that I did. So, 80% of that was profit. So as a brand new business doing, just under sort of five figures, it's like, well, that's quite good really, isn't it, for a first month? But what happened the next month was, because we spent a lot of time like talking about the agency and getting on board clients and all the rest of it in month one, then we did a load of sales. Then in month two, we spent a lot of time servicing the sales we made in month one. So the biggest lesson that I've learned is that, there is, if you don't manage it correctly, you get big peaks and troughs all the time. So, you focus on sales and marketing, you get a spike in sales because of the marketing, if you're good at doing it. Then the next month, if you haven't got the right team, you haven't got the right systems and processes in place, the next month the sales can drop off a cliff because then you're doing the servicing.
I've got
a joint venture that I'm doing with a big PR agency. They're a top 150 agency, and they've got so many, like, potentially we can do 1,000 podcast launches for the brands that they've worked with, all of these big brands. But we've put so much time into the setup of the system that it's not made any money yet. So there's these sort of peaks and troughs. So I'd say the lessons that I've learned is, don't allow yourself to over focus on sales 1 month and then over focus on deployment the next month, because then you just will have this chop and change peaks and troughs thing. Also, understand that if you're building something sustainable for the long term, it will probably take a bit more time, effort, energy and money than you would like to think. You know, they will say in the building trade, add 10% off and 20% on for unforeseen issues. I would say do the same in business. Add 10 or 20% on in terms of your time, in terms of your energy, in terms of your focus, in terms of the money, in terms of the success that it's going to take, what you're going to have to do to get it across the line, because that's definitely something that I've learned this time around. As I mentioned a minute ago, this time last year, I had a coaching brand that I'd spent 3 years creating. It was the UK's leading action-taking coaching brand. But I fundamentally, I just didn't agree with how the business was being run. There's three business partners and we always agreed majority rules. And the other two wanted to run it in one way. I wanted to run it a different way. So I decided to vote with my feet and left in November. But I've learned so many good lessons through that process, because this time round, this company that I'm building now is for the long term. This is me for good. Like, podcasting space in the UK is going to get dominated by me in terms of being the thought leader within the space, within the agency, within the space. Obviously, there's going to be other people that also have a piece of the pie, and that's great because you need competition or perceived competition. But I'm just setting myself up. I've been reading 10X a lot. I've been a god Grant Cardone in my ears, man. But I would say it's, I've learned a few really good lessons. The peaks and troughs has been a big one, because month one, I was kind of not walking around like an ego swag, but I was like, oh, look at us, nearly five figures. Because there was some other stuff that didn't come in that month, but came in like a couple of days within the second month. I was like, that would have been our first, 10 grand month. Fantastic. But then the next month, from complete transparency, from a cash flow perspective, was a shit show. Because we then had to service all the clients. So just be mindful of that, I'd say, would be a lesson.
Make sure the processes are in place before you roll out. Because that's one thing that I'm struggling with at the moment, is all of my website is being designed in the background. And I had a conversation with somebody the other day, a guy in New York, actually, he's a realtor in New York. And he said to me, what happens when you get, let's say, 20 clients? What are you going to do? How are you going to service them? And I was like, I don't know. All I'm focusing on at the moment is just attracting all these people and trying to get some money through the door and attract some clients. He said, yeah, but those clients will walk if you can't service them. So it's about really taking a step back from the website and thought, actually, I don't need to focus on all the branding and all of the logos and all that type of stuff. I need to focus on what's going to happen when I get one client. And then when I get one, then I can roll that out. Because it's all about having time to do stuff. Because like you said, focusing on sales and marketing is where the money's at. But actually, the business is run from the behind the scenes stuff as well.
Yeah, 100%. So we've just decided to go down a different route slightly with the agency, because there's a lot of podcasters who've launched a podcast and now they're teaching people how to launch podcasts, because, you know, there's so much money in the expert economy.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and I get it. And again, I've got an unfair advantage. I've got 14 years worth of broadcast experience, and I've already done 120 plus successful launches. And in terms of, you know, whoever it is within the industry, whether they're like, oh, but you don't understand about cardioid microphones. I'm like, no, I don't. And I couldn't give a shit, quite frankly. I teach people how to make very basic, very simple podcasts that build their brand and creates revenue. No one can touch me in that space. But ultimately, I'm on such an ego trip today. My God, get off your soapbox. What's wrong with you?
So, mate, honestly, I don't know the difference between this microphone and the microphone you've got in front of you. I just know that this microphone sounds good. That's it.
Neither do I. Don't worry about it. We don't need to know. But ultimately, one of the big things that I'm sort of being very mindful of this time round is to make sure that we're doing stuff in a different way. I kind of got some scar tissue, I would say, from the previous business that I ran, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we made a lot of money fast, but we spent a lot of money fast, if that makes sense. So I've got a very nice lifestyle now, but I wouldn't say I haven't got a business. I had a job.
Yeah.
You know, when James might mention it on his show, he talks about having a profitable job, not a profitable business. This time around, I'm building a business. So I've got audio producers, I've got a graphic designer, I've got people who I hand off the work to. But your point about the systems and the processes, the first couple of clients that came on board, it was great. I was like, right, I've got these templated emails. These get sent out. Then the client folder gets created in Google Drive. And then I add in the production team, and then the production team do this. And then the graphics team do this. And I Trello'd it. Oh my God, I Trello'd it. And there was a click through thing and all this stuff I'd never done before, because I was so set on doing the opposing thing that I'd done before. If I could layer in the stuff I did about making money before, like just like rinsing sales and making cash, which was great. And I could have the business acumen on top. Then we were away to the races. So the first couple of clients, I did that. But then I got busy servicing those clients. So then the next lot of clients, you didn't take on in the same way. So we decided that as an agency, we're going to go down the influencer marketing space. Because again, there's a lot of people who are now teaching people to do a podcast. And the natural progression is, once you've taught people how to do a podcast, now I'm starting to see there's a lot of like agencies popping up. And they have no, you know, they've been doing it for 5 minutes. They've bought a Rodecaster Pro desk. And now all of a sudden, they're an agency. So, okay, fine. It is what it is. But I was like, right, how do we stand out from what's going to be a very, very competitive marketplace very, very quickly? And I decided that influencer marketing works. Why could we not do that in this space? And I was like, actually, we can. So for example, we've got a couple of things in the pipeline, which I can't talk about at the moment, but we've got some people coming on board where we're going to do the production for them for free. We're going to do all of the behind the scenes stuff for free. We're going to do all the audio production. We'll do all of the launch process. We'll do all the consultancy for them, the artwork, the intro music. We'll put it onto, we'll syndicate it across all the platforms. We've got some people on, you know, some in PR that we can pull some strings with, et cetera. So, but then we're going to do a joint venture 50-50 share of any revenue that podcast generates, because I've got a platform where we can monetize it from day one.
Amazing.
All great. And my wife said to me last night, oh, where are you at with XYZ influencer? And I said, oh yeah, they've got the brand overview questionnaire. They've got to get it back to me. And she went, what comes next? And I was like, don't know. And she was like, you've really got to know this stuff. I was like, yeah, I know. But with like a new baby and a 3-year-old in the house and trying to service other clients, it just hasn't happened. But then I said to myself, and this was literally last night, I was like, but that's just not good enough. Like, I need to know what the process is. I need to, you know, focus on that, because it can be scaled before it needs to be scaled. Because, you know, at the moment we've got... Yeah. You know, less than 10 clients. We don't need to scale up at less than 10 clients. You can cobble it together and wing it every day on 10 clients. But I want to get it to a point where this agency will only work and monetize. It only works at scale. You know, it needs 100 clients to make it make money that's worth having, if that makes sense. So completely different mindset that I've got to this. And it's making me have to intentionally go slower, which is really uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. You know, people talk about like, you know, all success comes out of your comfort zone. And for a lot of people, like comfort zone is like, oh, well, I don't want to work any harder. I don't want to work any longer. I don't want to work any faster. For me, getting out of my comfort zone is slowing down. I hate going slow. I hate it.
What hours are you working at the moment, James? Because are you putting every living hour into it?
No, I'm absolutely not. And this has been another very weird thing. So like this morning, I took my little boy to Nanny and Granddad's house before this interview. So what time did we start? We started about 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I'll do 9 till 3.
Yeah.
Did 9 till 3 yesterday as well, because I've got a 3-week-old son and I've got a 3-year-old son.
Yeah.
And I've got a wife who's just had a 3-week-old son as well. And, just, you know, so you've got all this other stuff. So I'm trying to, weirdly, as I say, from the businesses that I've built within the coaching and the branding space that did six and seven figures within like 18 months, I'm trying to do some of the opposite stuff that I did, which sounds a bit counterintuitive because it made a load of money, but it didn't make me very happy. Yeah. And ultimately this time around, I'm trying to, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. And it's a bit of like, that's a bit of a Google quote, you know, put it on a C background and stick it on fucking Instagram. But it's so true. But this time around, I'm trying to, like, what elements that worked can I pick from last time?
Yeah.
And what elements from last time didn't work that I can add in? I'm trying to remove my ego. I'm trying to use, you know, a master NLP practitioner, an IPQA qualified performance coach. I'm trying to performance coach myself, because otherwise I just get stuck in a rut and I go, no, because no one can outwork me. I will sleep at a desk if I have to. And I know a lot of people say that, but I've generally like lived and breathed it for building these other businesses. But again, like I say, when I look back at it, I wasn't actually happy. So what's the point? Because ultimately in life, you know, the whole thing is chasing happiness, isn't it?
But all of your life and all of your experiences have come to this point. That's what you're saying. Everything has been a journey and an experience in order to achieve this. And you're right. This is what you're going to do now, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And it's one of those things where, weirdly, with the coaching and the branding business that I used to have, I think the reason why I rinsed through money as quick as I did, and the reason why I was very frivolous with it, you know, buying £400 bottles of champagne. I don't even really drink. It was like, let's buy a £400 bottle of champagne because you can. Let's buy, you know, I've got a 3.5 grand watch that I don't have on because you scratch it if you sit and type at a desk. And I also don't like it because it hurts my wrist. Ironic. You know, I've got 2 cars sat outside that, you know, during lockdown, you don't need either, let alone both. So all this stuff. But yeah, like I say, normally I'm very black and white. It's right or it's wrong. It's left or it's right. It's black or it's white. I'm trying to find the gray time around, which is really bizarre, but it's taken a deeper level of insight and intellect. And even like normally I've got a bit of a short fuse. It can be said I have got a bit of a short fuse. I wouldn't say that. My wife would say that. I would say I'm a fucking arsehole. But she would also say. But I'm trying to be very mindful of, yeah, just taking my ego out, being a little bit more mature and going, right, okay. So in certain situations, like I mentioned, month one, we did £7,725 in sales for a brand new business. Phenomenal. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, posting about it on social media, blah, blah, blah. But I've also posted on social media the fact that the next month we made £1,700 and it's a fucking disaster from a cash flow perspective. Normally, yeah, I get frustrated and be like, do you know what? I've just got, you know, you look after the new baby, you look after the kid. I don't know why I turn into Phil Mitchell when I get really angry.
I was going to say.
But
come from the East End.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I suddenly go a little bit more south and a little bit more out to the east of where we actually live. But I normally be like, well, I've just got to work 18 hours. I've just got to work harder. I've just got to work harder. But this time I'm like, do you know what? Sit in that moment. Why are you feeling these things? What is that knot in the pit of your stomach? Don't just allow it to be anger, because that's a lowest common denominator. What's actually behind that? Is it anxiety? Is it fear? Is it that your ego's been dented? Is it that you're worried that you can't provide for your family? Is it that you think, you know, you know, this time last year, because I did my tax return, I just got hit with a 15 grand tax bill 2 weeks ago that I had to pay within 6 days. And I was like, oh, I did not need that right now. But ultimately, what a great lesson. And as soon as that tax bill landed, I felt sick to the pit of my stomach.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
oh, you're joking. I knew I was going to have to pay it. But in that moment, I did. I felt like sick to my stomach. I felt angry. I felt frustrated. I felt annoyed about how we'd run the business and the fact that I was ended up with this 15 grand gap that I didn't even know was coming. I was annoyed with the accountant. He only gave me 6 days' notice to get it bloody paid. But I was like, right, normally I'd just gone down to the ego. Oh, I'm frustrated. I'm going to get in the car and go out and drive like a prick and listen to some race. I was like, do you know what? Just go for a walk quietly, leave your phone at home and think, like, why are you annoyed? Why are you frustrated? Why do you feel upset? Why are you angry? Why are you sad? Why are you the emotions that you're feeling?
Do you think this is because you're getting older, James? Because I think you get into that headspace that you're the ego, you're the man, you can do this. And this is why I think certain people rise to the top in business, because they've got that personality that allows them to be the center of attention. And that's not, I'm not trying to be big-headed about that, but you have to have people gravitate to you. But do you think as you get older, you realize that ego works only in certain situations?
Yeah, I think it's an age thing. I reckon you just get more life experience, don't you? You don't know what you don't know. It's one of my favorite phrases. You can't have knowledge that you've never had to go through before, you know. But now I've had, it's very strange because having had a level of perceived success, you know, previously, I'll be completely transparent, before 2017, you know, I'd had a lot of learning and life experience of stuff that did not work. You know, I'd done a lot of things relatively mediocre. I'd done, you know, I had a property management company, which was all right. I had a radio promotion agency, which was all right. I was on the radio for a bit and I was all right. You know, all this stuff. I was a cabaret singer and I was all right. You know, I'd done this stuff that was all right. But then having had a level of perceived, again, perceived success, you can look at it from a very different viewpoint. I'm not sure whether it's an, I think it's probably is an element of age. And I think the other thing for me is I've just made it a conscious decision. I've said, right, live in a grown-up house. You've got kids who rely on you. You can't just be like, I'm going to work 18 hours a day. You know, just going to shut my office door. Yeah. I'm just going to grind it out until my face falls off. You know, I'll sleep on the desk for 37 seconds and I'll get up and I'll do it again. Because that's not what life's all about. My little boy doesn't care that, you know, daddy had a great first month of business and then had a shit second month. He don't care. He wants to play fucking trampoline, go to the park and have a wee in a bush. I don't know why he always wants to wee in a bush. Is that, yeah, that's all he wants to do. And do you know what? That, as a, I guess that is a sort of age and wisdom. That becomes the stuff that's more important, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Those moments become more important. Now, this morning, getting him ready to go to nanny and granddad's, you know, we've got, as I mentioned, a three-week-old. So you're not getting that much sleep anyway. And this morning, it's like, right, come on, let's get up to nanny and granddad's. Let's get to nanny and granddad's. And he's messing about a little bit. And, you know, prior to, you know, 6 months ago, I've been really frustrated. Come on, just get in the car, you know, get your bloody clothes on, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, do you know what? He just wants to, he don't understand. You have to turn it into a bit of a game to make him do what you want him to do. Let him do that. Because, yeah, I think I am, yeah, I've not maturing. Thought about doing this, but I'm actually very mature, aren't I? Thank God.
We're I've very mature together, James.
We are, aren't we just? If only we'd known each other 12 years ago, we could have had a crack at a double act on the radio, I reckon.
Possibly. So we're coming up to the end of the podcast, and what we do on every single episode is ask the same five questions. I'm sure you've seen the questions because I sent them to you in advance.
I have.
So what's the worst sales mistake you've ever made?
The worst sales mistake I've ever made is selling too far in advance and then spending all the money. So pretty, like I mentioned, this coaching business, we did a six-figure month, then we did a six-figure week, and then we did a six-figure day. So we made over £100,000 in sales in a day. But as soon as that money came in, the way we used to run the business, and this is how sort of like Neanderthal the thinking was, but from all of us, we get the money, we split it in thirds, or we get the money, we keep 20, no, we didn't even keep the VAT back, Jesus Christ. We get the money, split it in thirds and put it in our banks. That was it. So 100 grand became 33 grand in a day for us in our pockets.
Was your life like, do you know the opening scene of Wolf of Wall Street where you're throwing a dwarf at a target and you're just like drinking champagne through your eyes?
But because of the guys that I was working with, I was the dwarf. So the only person who got hurt in dwarf throwing was actually me in that instance. But no, we did, you know, we had fast cars and we drank ridiculous champagne. We went to silly restaurants and it was great fun in the short term. But I knew subconsciously, I knew that it was short term. But the thing was, as well, these 100 grand sales days, they sound incredible from an ego standpoint, from people who want to, you mentioned it earlier, you know, people have to gravitate towards you to be a leader in your field, especially if you're coaching success and mindset and motivation. So actually, when you look at it, 100 grand, it's a 100 grand day. Well, it is a 100 grand day, but it's over five clients. So it's a 20 grand per client day. And then it's over the next 12 months. So it's actually 1,800 quid a month day. So not devaluing what it was, but not, I didn't see it for what it was, if that made sense. And this is why I stepped away in it, because my business partners would just keep selling people, selling the same people again and again and again and again. And I'm like, we're just getting more of a backlog of time. And eventually something breaks or something happens within their life, or they can't pay, or they want their money back, or they decide they don't want the service. If you're not provided the service, if you built on 50 grand and they've not actually entered into their period of that service because you're selling them for 2021 by this point, this is last year, like the straw that breaks the camel's back is going to happen at some point. Then the house of cards is just going to fall down because they couldn't see that. So yeah, I'd say the biggest sales mistake was selling people weirdly, selling too hard and too far in advance, and spending that money. Because the other thing as well, then in that instance, you find yourself begrudging having to provide the service because you've already had the money. One of the examples, we were coaching coaches how to coach. So because we're IPQA qualified certified coaches, all three of us were, I wrote to coaching syllabus. I was like, this is how you coach people into success. This is how you set goals, blah, blah, blah. So we had all this syllabus. But then obviously we'd taken the money in for all the people who are going to be on the course, split it three ways, bought a car, bought some champagne, bought a shit watch, whatever. But then like, you've not even left enough money in the bank, in the business bank for like, well, how are we going to pay for this fancy hotel that we're hosting it in for 12 months? Oh, and I was saying, look, you know, this, it's cost us 1,500 quid a day for the hotel. we need to at least hold 1,500 times 12. Can we at least hold back 18 grand and then split? No, we'll just make it back. And I was like, oh, fuck me. So you're on this constant hamster wheel of having to sell to pay for the stuff you've already been paid for, if that makes sense.
It's not at all.
Not at all. So that, I'm not sure if that's a, yeah, don't be a sales dick. If you need a soundbite, don't be a sales dick.
I'm going to trim that up. What did you want to be when you grew up, James?
I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Did you?
I did. I wanted to be, I watched
Jurassic Park.
Indiana Jones.
Oh, no.
Way Indiana before, Jones. And I also, what was the, I can't remember what it was. The Land Before Time. Do you remember The Land Before Time?
The cartoon one.
Yeah, the cartoon one with Petrie.
Yeah.
Don't style it out like you didn't cry about Land Before Time. We've all been there, Matt. Stop trying to give it loads, all right? between Land Before Time and Indiana Jones, I decided I wanted to be an archaeologist. And I loved history. I always loved like diving into stuff. So like Tutankhamun, I was like, oh, imagine if I could, you know, find the next pyramid or whatever. But yeah, that didn't
I think they've
transpire.
All been found.
I think that has set sail. So I decided instead I'd be a second-rate radio DJ instead. So that worked out well.
What's the worst job that you could ever do and why?
Do you know what? I've done a lot of sales jobs and I just hate with a passion trying to sell stuff you're not passionate about. So anything. So when I was 19, I got a job for Zenith Windows selling double glazing.
We've all had them.
Don't get me wrong, because this cocky, I had a Nova 1.3 SR. I thought I was the lad. And I'd drive around Buckinghamshire and Berkshire and I'd sell these windows.
I'd turn up at the time as well.
And my collar up. I had a Hackett t-shirt, collar up, arm out the window, just like one arm tan the whole time. Thought I was the lad.
Yeah.
And I remember I after this like week-long training course, I went out and on my second deal, I sold a whole house. I sold 36 grand worth of windows. 18 years old. I was due to get like 4.5 grand commission or something like that. And I walked away. I was like, but that, and it was an elderly couple. Yeah. I was like, do you know what? They just don't need these windows. They just don't need them. And I told them they didn't need them. So I went back to the house. I said, you just don't need these windows. By the way, I said, and I told them the whole sales pitch. And I was like, this is just terrible. I'm never going to make any money at this. I said to them, look, the way that the window industry works is that they talk about, you know, they're going to give you this, if they could put signage boards outside, they could give you a percentage discount. I will tell you what the cost price of these windows that you could get them for, which is a lot less than 36 grand. I said, go and tell that to Anglian. Tell them that you know this information. I said, and they'll beat that as well. And I wish you well. I got in the car. And 2 days later, I had a big car crash. And I had the sample window in the back of the car. So my car got ruined. The engine came in the car. Wow. It was like a complete write-off. To be fair, shout out to Zenith Windows. They so sturdy, they'll survive a car crash. But I just hated anything I'm not passionate about selling, I find really difficult. I know there's people who are natural salespeople. I've got a sort of a natural sales charisma, I guess. I could talk to anybody. I could build rapport with people. But if my heart's not in it, I just can't get on board with it.
I used to do the door-to-door electricity and gas selling. So I used to go around.
Oh, no.
And I used to have, so one of the tips that they used to have was they used to have a list of all the houses that we had to knock on. But what they used to do was they made us highlight in different colours, different houses. So whenever you went to somebody's house, their house would be highlighted a different colour to everybody else's. So it made them feel like they were being singled out for this special gas and electricity deal. But actually, all we did was the morning of the calls, we'd just go around and just highlight loads of different houses. Honestly, I hated it. There was probably 4 or 5 people that really, really excelled and knew the houses that they could sell into and knew the estates that would buy always. Like these were the gas and key electric meters, stuff like that. But mate, I must have known it for about 4 months, rain, wind or sun. And I was just, it was awful. Oh. But it taught me so much about the power of objections.
Oh, that's it. And I think sales jobs, as opposed to any other job, have the opportunity to teach you so many more lessons than anything else, because you do see people at their best, you do see people at their worst. And fundamentally, when you're selling to somebody, it sounds like really wafting a bit over the top, you're selling to someone's psychology, and you have to work people out, and you have to work out what makes them tick, and you have to work out, you know, visual cues and body language cues and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I think you can learn so many lessons, but again, you've got to, at 90, I didn't care about learning a lesson. I just wanted to have some more money for alloy wheels for this now written off 1.3 SR Nova.
Did you have a sub in the boot as well?
I didn't, because there's so much rust. If I had a sub in the boot, it would have fallen out the back. I actually had one, I had three Novas at one point. I had a blue one, a red one, and a white one. And the white one had no floor and also no MOT or no tax or no license. But yeah, it was like a Flintstone car. It was ridiculous. I was a different guy at 19, Matt.
And all that time ago must be, what, 20 years ago? How old are you now, James?
Well, my 36, 37? Yeah, so 20 years ago.
20 years ago, you could get away with that stuff. I remember my first car. My first car was when I was 16, I had a Fiat Panda and the clutch blew out. So I left it on the side of a hill and just left it. Nowadays.
you could do that though, couldn't you? I'm just going to leave it.
And somebody would just come and collect it or pick it up and use it. Honestly, my clutch burnt out because it was trying to go up a hill in third gear and it wouldn't come out of gear. So I just thought, fuck it, I'm just going to leave it here. And I did. And more time.
Brilliant.
What was the last book that you read, James?
At the moment, I'm revisiting The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone, which I'm a big fan of. I think it's great. But the last book I read, which I want to thoroughly suggest to all of your listeners, is called Journey of a Lifetime by Bob Iger. The CEO of Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Journey of a Lifetime. It is absolutely phenomenal. So it's sort of like part narrative, part sort of biography or autobiography. But there's so many like lessons in there on how to deal with people. And this is a guy who worked his way up from the mailroom of TV stations to now owning or being the CEO of Disney for the last 15 years. And he's a great example, actually. Everyone's like, oh, if you want to really succeed in life, you've got to be an entrepreneur. Actually, he's been an entrepreneur the entire time. His annual salary is $67 million. And he's got equity stake in it as well. But yeah, wow. Bob Iger, Journey of a Lifetime is absolutely phenomenal. I couldn't put it down.
I'm reading Sabri Subri at the moment, Sell Like Crazy.
Oh, is it good?
I got recommended it maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then I bought it on Kindle on the day that I got recommended it. I'd started it 2 days ago and I cannot put it down. It's so good. But about framing what your ideal buyer profile is and trying to sell through that messaging, honestly, I'd recommend that as well.
Oh, I have to go and have a little look at that.
So the last question is, who is the leader that you look up to the most?
I guess it depends on your definition of a leader. I've got to be honest, like one of the people I really look up to is James Sinclair.
Yeah.
I love him dearly as a friend. He's a really good friend, very knowledgeable guy. And, you know, I watched him through the crisis and I saw how he handled that situation. He literally said to anyone who was like senior team, on site that day, he said, can you come to the barn, call a meeting? And he literally sat and he looked in the whites of everybody's eyes. You know, there's people who've worked at his Marsh Farm Park for longer than we've been alive. You know, that place has been, you know, used to be run by the council like 30, 40 years ago. And some of the people who work on the tills have been there since then. They've worked for 30 years. And he had to say, look, we're being laid off. He didn't know what was coming next. I like him on the positive side. Yeah, I think he's very aspirational and inspirational when he shows behind the scenes. But then so I already had a love and a respect for him. But then watching him have to lay off those staff, not knowing what was coming next, the way that he handled it, I was like, you could not have done that any better. I actually pulled him to one side. I said, I hope you feel very proud. I know it's a difficult time, but I hope you feel very proud of how you've handled that situation, because I don't think there's many people who would have handled it with any better skill or decorum. So yeah, James Sinclair, I'd say, whether you're on the way, you know, he's done 100 million quid in sales. He does 12, 13 million quid a year, you know, very easily in sales. He's one of the leading experts. It's a shame that he's not a bigger celebrity in the business space than he currently is. And I think it's just a matter of time. And I think he will eventually get there. But I think he's got so much insight to share. And he's very generous with it as well. You know, very generous. You can join up to his Entrepreneurs University for like 50 quid. Become a member, you get these weekly lessons, literally his business lessons from the last 20 years, and you can get webinars and you can go on his podcast with him and all that stuff. I'm doing a podcast with him this morning, actually. So yeah, I'd say James Sinclair would be the person I'd look up to. And if you haven't heard of him, if you're listening to this podcast, go and check out the episode from series one that I know that you did with him. Whenever he does a podcast, my God, it's just like value bombs for an hour.
And he wore pink shorts.
he will always. That's his only downside. Is he's a horrific dresser. I mean, do you remember Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen from Change Room?
Yes, yeah.
He's basically like he's a business icon version of Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen.
I saw his Instagram post yesterday, which was that he restarted his podcast, or he's restarted getting back into the studio. And he's from the top up. He's got his shirt from the waist down. He's just got his legs out. He just doesn't care, does he?
He did an interview last week for Channel 4 because they're talking about reopening soft play centres because they're obviously one of the sort of people that have been hit, or the sectors that have been hit hardest by lockdown because they just kept them locked down for no apparent reason. Well, there is an apparent reason, but you know, there was no justification for it realistically based on the fact that everything else could open. So Channel 4 came down to Lakeside. I saw him do like this, like talking head bit. And he was in his like Party Man branded T-shirt and all that. And he's got like scruffy shorts on and a pair of flip flops. I'm like, oh, Jim, come on, man. But that's just who he is. No airs and graces. He is this, you know, his first book, which is probably doesn't do it the business justice that it deserves, The Millionaire Clown.
Yeah.
That's kind of how he's perceived. But actually backing that up, there's a lot of very smart acumen for sure. Yeah.
100%. Thanks, James. Thanks for coming on. Where can people find out more information before we go?
They can go to ultimatepodcast.training or they can go to ultimatepodcastgroup.com or just search me on all the socials, James Burt, B-U-R-T-T, and I'm on Insta and Twitter and all that good stuff.
Thanks for coming on, James.
Thank you for having me, my friend. Who knew we had such a checkered history that we should delve into a lot more? When we're allowed to, let's meet face-to-face and have a beer.
Let's do it.